Steve Blass is with us. And again, you can hear all these stories and more about his career and about his life in his book called Steve Blass, A Pirate for Life. Let's talk a little bit more about Clemente. Tell me about the first time you ever saw him play.
Well, the first time, of course, I saw him in the World Series against the Yankees, and we all remember Mazeroski's home run. But the next year, after the 1960, I went to spring training, the big league camp, for the first time, and there was two rooms in the clubhouse in Fort Myers where we trained, the big league room and the Scribinis, you know, the minor league invitees. We didn't even hardly dare to look around the corner because it was not only a major league team, and we were in awe of that, but a world champion major league team. They had just beaten the mighty Yankees the preceding October. So they were all so special, but and so you were reluctant to approach any of them, but really reluctant to approach Clemente because he kind of held himself in a stern kind of manner and in a composed manner, and he had a presence that you didn't feel like you wanted to approach him unless you had your act together. And that kept on going because I went to spring training in each of the next few years before I got to the big league. So I had a chance to watch him, and he held himself at a higher standard physically in the way he played and the way he carried himself. So the approach was, you know, we as rookies really didn't approach him till we felt like we had validated ourselves that we were good enough to be on the same Pittsburgh Pirate team, major league team, as he was on. To the degree, and I tell his story, and it's a true story, I finally felt like I had done that. I got to the point where I could approach him, and I went up and I said, Roberto, I said, you know, here's the deal. If I ever get traded, I'm going to pitch you inside because every National League pitcher pitches you away every year. You hit 350 every year. He said, Blast, I'm going to tell you one thing. You pitch me inside, I will hit the ball to Harrisburg. I said, all right, we're cool. Good enough. Yeah, we can go on with our lives now. But he was just different, and it was just such an honor to be on the same field with him. And when you consider there were three Hall of Famers on that group, Maz at second, Stargell at first, and Clemente in right field, I used to be on the mound. I said, you know, just hit the ball that way, and I'm going to be fine. Anything in that direction, these guys will take care of. So it was that kind of setting.
How did he adjust? Because he comes to a different country, a different culture. How difficult was that for him, Steve?
It was very extremely difficult. Much before I got there, he got there in '55 or '56, and I was still in high school. But back in that day, he was not only black, but he was Latin. So he had two barriers, if you will, to a certain degree: the color of his skin and the fact that English was a second language. And this guy was a bright guy. This was not just some jock that could play baseball and not give you much other than that. He was a very, very intelligent man. So he was aware of his surroundings, how he was being accepted or not being accepted. Because remember, this is back in the 50s. There was still a lot of racial stuff going on, even in the North. And you back that up with the fact that he's trying to express himself in his second language. And being a very proud guy and a very intelligent guy, he was always wary of not being able to convey exactly what he wanted to convey in English, and it would have been so much easier in Spanish, his native tongue. So he was misquoted at times. There were writers that would write write like the pigeon English, they used to call it, that he would speak, and I'm sure that was an insult to him. So he had a double whammy to deal with, and he did it with pride. He never compromised his principles, to my understanding, before I got there, and certainly not after I got there. So he was tested with what he was going through. And to my mind, at least the years I was with him, he never blinked, not once, never compromised those principles. He was just different. We were like the enlisted guys, and he was the general. I don't know. I just considered that to be that way. I couldn't take my eyes off him. And I knew I could never be the quality player that he could be, but because of watching him and knowing what he meant, I would be embarrassed if I didn't at least try to be as good as him. I wouldn't reach those heights. But he kind of dragged us all along in that particular area, that particular subject.
And the other thing I think that was probably difficult for him until he proved himself to be a star and people would become more accepting and receiving of him, I would think coming to a city like Pittsburgh, which is blue-collar, steel mill type of mentality as well, not like New York where you have a melting pot of cultures and everything, I would think that that would have been a real challenge for him as well, Steve.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he was revered in New York because the heavy Latin-Spanish population there, and there was a degree of that in Pittsburgh, but certainly not to the extent of the major cities in general, and New York in particular, so he was revered there. Yeah, it was difficult, not only in those areas we just discussed, but also, his playing ability was not recognized, I think, baseball-wide, like it was recognized in Pittsburgh. And that 71 World Series was his showcase. That was his stage, that was his arena, to show everybody around baseball what we had been seeing in Pittsburgh for 20 years. And that meant a lot to him. That meant a great, great deal. And his performance in the series was stunning. Not only the numbers, the obvious numbers, but hitting home runs when almost it seems like it screamed for a home run attempt. I guess he hit a couple, but the one he hit in the seventh game was unbelievable because we were in the game 2-1. But there were two throws that I remember from that World Series that he made that 40 years later now did not result in outs, and I have a vivid image of each one. One of the games he came over to the right field line for a high fly ball, caught the ball, did a 360, and threw a strike to Hebner at third base. We didn't get the out. Did not get the out, but I remember it to this day. The other one, he was playing right field, obviously, and a ball came down into the corner on the warning track like a hockey puck would come around the boards. He picked it up on the roll on the warning track and threw a strike to Sanguine at home plate, and wisely the Orioles held the runner up at third base. I can recall those two plays to this day that didn't result in outs that he made. And, again, it was just an opportunity for all of baseball to be mesmerized by the way he played the game. As we were, even when he ran, he galloped. He wasn't a fluid runner like a Brock or even a Barry Bonds when he was younger. He galloped, but he still got there quickly enough not to be called out. He had a presence when he was kneeling down in the on deck circle. Maybe that's the best way to describe it.
I remember as a kid visiting my grandparents in Parkersburg, West Virginia, and as I alluded to you before we started the interview, I remember walking down the streets, and you could tell who were Pirate fans and who were Reds fans because the broadcast would be on certain houses as you walked down the street. But I had a chance to play American Legion ball, and one of the teams that we played was the Little Pirates that played up in Pittsburgh. And, of course, we played them in Forbes Field. And I remember the first time I walked into that stadium, I was just – it stopped me in my tracks, Steve. Describe to people old Forbes Field.
Well, Forbes Field – first of all, I miss those fields. I miss the county stadiums in Milwaukee. I miss going to Wrigley. I miss Forbes because they smelled like ballparks. I don't know whether they're stale beer and cigars, but whatever. They smelled like ballparks, and that was big for me. It still is whenever I run across that. But Forbes Field was huge. First of all, it was 436 to left center, 457 to center field, and they used to take the batting cage out there because it was never an issue. And the flagpole. They were both in play. Very seldom were they involved. So it was huge, 365 down the left field line, but you had to hit it over the scoreboard. So that was a huge part. 300 down the right field line, but you had a screen. And Clemente would play that concrete wall like he was a violin virtuoso. So it was huge. It was a great pitcher's ballpark. And it was old style, and it was so great. And just to go back, because I want to touch on this. You touch back on the fact that you could walk down the street and hear the games on the radio. You could hear Bob Prince, our legendary broadcaster, and KDKA was the station back then, and it was a powerhouse. We used to listen to the games back in Connecticut, where I grew up in Falls Village, Connecticut, a town of 700 people. And my dad, when I pitched, would get a six pack and put it in the car. And just drive around this small town till KDKA came in strong, just shut it right down there, drink the six-pack, listen to the game, and at the end of each season, he would send Bob Prince an invoice for 2 car batteries and 16 cases of beer. It was great. It was great, and it was a different world then, but it was wonderful.
Yeah, and Bob had that noted home run call. Tell everybody what it was.
Well, you can kiss it goodbye.
Yeah. And then
and other ones, the bug on the rug, and,
right.
And let's have a Hoover if you want a double play, want a vacuum cleaner kind of approach, and it was fair by a gnat's eyelash, and we need a bloop and a blast. And he was classic. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame. He promoted Pirate baseball like it will never, ever be conveyed again, and I'm so proud of the guys I worked with, Lanny Fritteri, and I worked some cable games with Bob. And Mike Lang and Greg Brown, the guy I work with now. Bob Prince was one of a kind, absolutely one of a kind. The second game I did with him on cable, I didn't know that you were forbidden to have any booze in the booth, but Bob called down to the press room and said, send up 2 screwdrivers. I thought something was loose in the booth. But he was bigger than life. I mean, he was a bigger presence for the Pirates, maybe than any ball player.
Steve, you mentioned about the old ball yards, and there was something special. Now, again, I'm going to go back to my childhood, as I used to take the trolley out to old Griffith Stadium, where they played baseball out there as well. And there was, they were old, but they had character. Tell me about some of the other favorite moments and favorite ballparks you visited.
Well, yeah, they were different because they weren't the cookie cutter style we eventually got into. But my first start was at Dodger Stadium. That to me is still the mecca of baseball. At one time, there were just 81 events in that whole building, and it was just 81 Dodger home games. That's what it was until it got into postseason. But that was a pitcher's mecca because when I came up, Koufax was there, Drysdale was there, and that was magic to me. I love that. That's still probably my favorite ballpark outside of Forbes and Three Rivers. Of course, those are tinged with great memories of success. But I love Dodger Stadium, and I loved, as I said, the old ballparks. The Astrodome was kind of a crazy thing. But now we're going back to some ballplayers with personalities and character, maybe indicative of some of the elements of the city that they're built in. So I applaud that. I certainly did. I think the Baltimore Camden Yards was probably the leader of the pack in that. But our ballpark in Pittsburgh is totally unique because you can't buy the setting we have. We're right on the Allegheny River, the whole skyline, and it's not a huge skyline, but it's a spectacular skyline. You can see at night or during the day. At night, the contrast is wonderful. That skyline looks like the background of a movie set out of New York City. And it's just absolutely gorgeous, our ballpark, to the point where they designed it without even putting light standards to disrupt the look of the skyline. It's just a gorgeous setting, a gorgeous ballpark. It's been voted, I think, the number one ballpark in America by a few different surveys. So it's a treat to walk in there every day. I never take it for granted. It's spectacular.
We only have about a minute, but do you have a particular favorite moment that's kind of ingrained in Steve Blass's mind forever?
Of course, Game 7 of a World Series, because you dream about that as a kid. And I got to live it, and it's so rare. There are a lot of guys that had great careers and have never had that experience. But to go through that with those 25 guys, play with Hall of Famers, just to put on a Major League uniform, the first day I did that is a day I'll never forget. So I've had a bucket load of great memories, and it's been absolutely a wonderful ride. There's a glitch of a couple of years, but the big picture, yeah, it's filled with great, great positives, great memories.
Steve, as you know, we're heard worldwide on the American Forces Network. That means our troops over in Afghanistan and elsewhere around the world get a chance to catch a show. I know in about 30 seconds you'd like to send a shout-out to them.
I would, and I don't want to get too melodramatic or emotional, but to these men and women who do that and commit themselves to unspeakable risk at times, please don't ever think you're taken for granted. There are so many of us that wish we could thank you personally. It's never taken lightly. What you do is part of why we have our freedom. It's why we're brought up in a country where nobody says you don't have a chance to go for your dream, and you men and women preserve all of that, and you represent everything good about the United States of America. We all love you, and we send our hopes and prayers that you come back home safely.
Steve, I want to thank you very much and urge people to check out this wonderful book. Steve Blass, A Pirate for Life is the name of the book. You're welcome back here anytime. Take care, Steve.
All right. Appreciate the visit. Thanks so much.
Steve pitched in the major leagues for 10 years, all of those in a Pittsburgh Pirates uniform, led the league in shutouts with five in 1971, and that was the same year in which he and the Pirates won the World Series championship. Nice to have you with us on Sports Byline.